Hey there, welcome to ATL and 29, a podcast that looks at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. My name is Kevin Chouinard. I am here with Glenn Willis recording on a Sunday, and we've got a few things to talk about. Vete Krejci, the schedule, maybe some other stuff. Were you shocked that the Hawks are going to play 82 games this season?
That's for some reason that was the number I was expecting, so I did some analysis on that. But do we still know how to do this? I like if I know it wasn't that long ago we recorded, but it feels like do we still know how this works? Hopefully it goes fine.
Yeah, it's been a while. I don't know. I'm gonna double check and make sure I hit the record button. Yes, we did hit the record button. Okay, so that's a good start. And anything notable of the Hawks schedule?
Well, I was looking at it today, trying to do a little preparation, acting like a professional. So they have 0 instances of 5 games and 7 nights.
Okay.
So Boston, the Clippers, and Utah have 3. So the Hawks have no instances of that. That's interesting to me. 3 and 4 nights, 9 of those. So 5 teams have 10, 2 have 11. So I think they kind of ranked pretty well there. They have 15 back to backs, which is I think as many as any team in the league. So you don't get to 5 and 7, you don't get as many 3s and 4s, but you do get the back to backs. But I kind of did a breakdown of that, and most of them are an away game followed by a road game, and so there's not like many away that I saw. So even the back to backs are pretty favorable. So I thought the schedule was kind of kind to them. I also thought noticed that I think the last 2 seasons the Hawks have done their West Coast road trip right around new starting around New Year's and kind of going into January. And I always thought that was kind of difficult when coming out of the holidays, going straight on the road. All that sort of stuff. They don't have that trip, and it's not all in one trip this time. They don't have that trip until like mid-March.
Right.
And I went back and looked. It was three seasons back they had a March West Coast swing at that point in time too. So I just kind of looking through it, it feels like this one's a little bit more kind than the last couple have been. Just kind of going through it. So that's my response. I'm not the kind of person to go look at, oh, when are they playing this team, or what that is. I was interested. They play Boston, Philly, Cleveland all 4 times. They play Milwaukee and New York 3 times. I didn't look at past that. So that was noteworthy. And the back to back kind of it feels like the last few seasons they had kind of Miami, back to back. I know they did last year right after, I think it was not long after the Quinn got hired, but in the division there aren't any of those kind of back-to-back games where they're down to Miami for 2 games or whatever. I think the only kind of in place back-to-back they have is in Toronto, I think. And so like Charlotte is October, February, March, April. Miami is November, December, January, April. Washington, November, November. That's beginning and end, December, January. Then Orlando's November, January, February. So even the divisional games I thought are kind of more fairly dispersed across. Sometimes if you get the same team in your division and you got a key guy that's injured, they got a key guy that's injured, I feel like it kind of swings the interdivisional map. So from that standpoint, it feels like a pretty fair and kind schedule, all things compared. So that was my kind of takeaway when I went through it today.
It to me, it feels a little bit different. It seems like for I don't even know how long, like every schedule was pretty close to the one before it. Like a lot of the Hawks schedules just year to year just feels very almost routine. Like you got this thing in October and you got the road trip in late December, and there's usually a home stand in February. And I mean, some of that stuff kind of still stands. I've kind of got a longish sort of home stand in February with 5 out of 6 at home, but like re really consistent year to year. It feels like this one to me is different, and one of the things that seems like it's been fairly consistent in every Hawks schedule over the last decade or so, was that they'll get two or three sort of manageable games at the beginning of the season, and all of a sudden there's like this miserable stretch of six or seven games in a row, like right at the beginning. So like inside of the first 10 games of the season, they're just getting hammered with a really difficult schedule.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like they have that this year. It seems like it's pretty manageable for the first 15 games. Not necessarily easy, but it's not, there's no murderer's row of
Yes.
four games in a row where it's just like, oh, they're going to be big underdogs every single game. It seems pretty manageable. And then the other thing is that God bless the in-season tournament. If the Hawks actually manage to advance to the elimination round, they're going to be coming off a horrific road trip. They'll just be on the road forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they would win like that seventh straight game in Vegas or wherever it is that they're playing this. They've also got a game in Mexico City around that time. It's just like that late November stretch and into early December when they play the in-season tournament is going to be pretty brutal.
Yeah, I think the season tournament kind of helps with that early schedule because your group is typically going to have a few of the better teams, a few of the lower teams, and not quite as good teams. I think that getting packed into the first third of the season, first quarter of the season, probably, right, is probably helps with that. I remember last year when we were talking about it was like November was brutal. Like they got Detroit like out of the gate and a few things like that. It was like, if you looked at the first 20, it was Milwaukee three times, the Boston two times, the Philly two times, and you just kind
Yeah,
of went
not
from
there.
there. And this one is just a little bit more kind in that way. So yeah. So but that you called out that November kind of, I mean, every team's gonna have a stretch of like that you look at it and it's like, oh man, this is the 3 weeks or whatever that's gonna be tough for us and a grind and things like that. And the Hawks is that's right there in November, so they'll have to navigate that. But yeah, it's always fun to see the schedule come out, and just kind of start to kind of look through and when is that first game and where is it, and they'll be up I-85 and in Charlotte, and it's so I think that's kind of a friendly away game for the start. I think the Hawks media is that's a pretty accessible spot to kind of be there. You'll always get the whole contingent on opening night when it's on the road, say in Detroit. I think it was Detroit last year, but Charlotte's a little bit more accessible, so that's helpful too. I also think the NBA is getting better at having teams play closer to home around the holidays. So even if you're on the road, like I don't know, it feels like the last few seasons the Hawks were always like in Utah the day after Thanksgiving or wherever, like a long way from home, And I think this year, like I want to say this Memphis. The day after, I can't remember if this is Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever, but I think the NBA is getting better about kind of keeping teams close to home around the holidays. Setting aside the marquee games on Christmas Day, of course. But I think that's good for the players too, and I'm happy to see that be something the NBA seems to be trying to do. So, yeah, all in all, I think it's kinder than the last few have been.
Since the last time we spoke, the Hawks waived Vete Krejci, and that's sort of interesting in its own right, but it's also interesting that they waived a player essentially on a non-guaranteed contract. So I would ask you sort of twofold. First of all, just in terms of the player dynamics, the player they cut, where Vete's career goes from here, I'd ask you about that. And second of all, how do you fit it into the context of, does this mean the Hawks have a move coming? Does this mean that the Hawks are pretty much done? That they kind of have a gut feeling that maybe, hey, this is the team that we're just going to have going forward. Like, how do you react, one, to Vete, and two, to using this as a smoke signal for what's to come over the next, I don't know, 4 to 5 weeks?
Yeah, so I think it makes it less likely that there's some kind of big move coming.
Agreed.
You typically want flexible contracts to kind of stack into salary that kind of match salary and things like that. So, these contract would be kind of perfect to kind of slot in if you need to kind of stack in two or three guys that you're trying to cover, say, 8 million in gap, and what have you. So, I think it makes it less likely. I don't have all. I read all the same people who have sources that everyone else reads about this. It just sounds to me like that the Raptor around Siakam, for example, the Raptors and Hawks just couldn't agree to kind of what a fair package was, and the Raptors are in a tough spot. I think we talked about a little bit. Like, I think it seems like they should have seen the risk of, Freddie heading elsewhere for more money. And then once that happened, I think their roster construction challenges is as hard as any team in the league right now. I think it's really, really hard. You go around Scottie. Scottie's not the best ball handler, not the best shooter. I like him as a connective player, and he's a good defender when he's not fouling a lot, but he's young. I mean, he's young. It's fair to say that. But how do you, like, how do you, are you building around Scottie? And what does that mean for Siakam? Because Siakam's easily the better player of the two by a lot, in my opinion, and then Anunoby wants more run and all that sort of stuff. So it's going to be from like just watching what Toronto does, that'll be interesting. But my guess is that that's, I don't know, almost dead, and that they're going to go into the season and maybe kind of evaluate things as closer to the trade deadline. In terms of V, the thing for me is I thought he was probably the Hawks' best player at Summer League, probably. Offense, I mean, he was really good at Summer League, but I think the challenge for him is defensively. You and I've talked about a little bit, like, he's not big enough to defend at the three and the four. He doesn't have the weight, the bulk, all that sort of stuff. And then if you're going to try to slide him the guards, he really doesn't have the quickness. And guys who are as lanky as him usually don't, And so he has a defensively, he kind of has a body that's not really, kind of put together for a specific role or a specific position. And so I think that's kind of where the challenge is going to be. My guess is that if he wants to make the most money, that Europe is going to be where that is, for him. But he's a smart player. He's a good teammate. When I saw him and talked with him in Summer League, his kind of leadership capacity jumped out at you some. And so there's a lot there beyond even just his playing, the skills he has as a player that he brings. It made me wonder, like, he might be a coach one day. I mean, he kind of talked like a guy who was thinking at that level. And so it'll be interesting to kind of see where he lands and what the future holds. He's a, from my interaction with him, and seems like a really likable guy, enjoyable guy. Everybody enjoys playing with him. I just think, you look at, okay, if the roster is what it is, DeAndre, Jalen, and Sadiq, are going to eat up, like, all the minutes, at their position, and then, you got AJ and Bogey, presumably those guys playing off the bench, I think, kind of on the wing. So I mean, he was not lined up to be a rotation player anyway. And perhaps this also means that Patty Mills is going to be, on this roster, which we didn't. I mean, all the noise that came out when that trade happened was the Hawks weren't sure that Patty was really acquired with the intent of him being, on the team, and I think that kind of the way things are kind of shaking there is that they need Patty, and it kind of probably came down to that. So yeah, I think, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, every day right now, what we're getting, the news we're getting is so and so's going to China, so and so's going here, so and so's going, and I do wonder if, like, in the next week, if we'll see Vit landing there, or if he's going to try to get a, land a camp deal, with another team that might be able to kind of give him some consideration.
Yeah, you used a phrase a minute ago when you were talking about Scottie Barnes, and you said, well, he's a you believed in him as a connective player, and Vit certainly had that going for him. His offense wasn't just for him. Like, whatever he did on offense was sort of for the betterment of the team. Like, he was really good at doing things to set up his teammates in good spots. But yeah, the defense is a problem. It even showed up in Summer League. Like, you forget, is there somebody that he can guard in an NBA season? Like, even in Summer League, it was like, well, who's he gonna guard? He didn't seem to have a place, and that's not ideal. Like, even if there's somebody he can guard in an NBA context because they're not too strong or not that big. You know, if you're playing next to Trey, that's probably somebody you want Trey guarding. So it's tricky. And yeah, I'd be probably have a nice career somewhere, but we'll have to see where that ends up.
Yep. We wish him well and root for him and all that. And we'll see what the next thing is for him and hope it's a great situation for him.
You mentioned Patty Mills a minute ago, and I think he's an interesting sort of fringe candidate. Oh, I don't usually tip off the questions to you ahead of time, which
no, you don't.
is a credit to you that you just go on anything. And I don't tell, hey, Glenn, we're going to talk. No, just hey, you want to talk on Saturday? And then we do it. And then I just fire away and you're ready for it. But I did tip you off today because I thought this was an interesting exercise, might require some pre-recording skills of writing down what you think here, because I want you to add up to 240 in that, you know, if we look at a full and current Hawks rotation, you know, which players are in it, which players are not in it. And as you go through line by line, like how many minutes do you see for each player who is in the rotation, presuming that they start the season with a fully healthy roster with the players that are currently on the roster right now?
I did appreciate the heads up here, which is, like, you know, not our normal approach as you laid out there. And so I, you know, the main point of me doing some pre-work was just to make sure I actually landed on 240 and not, like, because honestly, the first time I opened up a spreadsheet, started
putting it in,
I got to, I think my first shot without checking any math got me to 288, I think.
Uh-oh.
I was like, oh, and I was looking at these players, and I was like, who's losing minutes here, right? So it was an interesting exercise to kind of work through. Before we kind of go through where I landed and let you, you know, critique it, I think for me, the swing decision is Quinn going to stagger Trey and DeJounte or not? Because if he's not, then I think Patty has to play. Does that make sense to you? I think if he does stagger them, I think Patty is not in the rotation regularly. So I just want to kind of start with that before I kind of talk through the way I kind of structured my distribution of minutes. Does that make sense to you, or do you see something different there?
I mean, I would say, I think he probably does stagger them, first of all. And I wouldn't go as far as saying is there's no way. Like, I think he could get interesting, do some interesting things, especially with Jalen Johnson and Bogey. Like, you, I don't know. I wouldn't say never, but I would say that it's more than likely. But boy, and does it have to be Patty Mills? Like, there could it be, if there's some directive from above, hey, you know, Kobe needs to get his feet wet this season. I don't know. I wouldn't put it at 100%, but I just think that they're going to stagger to begin with anyways. Like, I think that's important for DeJounte, you know, just to get feel. I don't think it's hard to word this. Like, it's not that Trey is not easy to play with, but touches are important. Players have feel. It's really hard to have good feel when you don't touch the ball as much. And as willing as a passer as Trey is, it's not necessarily a, hey, four guys touch the ball this position, five guys touch the ball this possession. Sometimes they have good passing and it's three guys touch the ball in a possession. So I just think that for DeJounte's sake and for the overall sake of the team, that if DeJounte gets more touches when Trey sits, that that's a good thing for the team at large.
Yeah. And historically, Quinn has believed in touches. Like, he, for a time in Utah, even went so far as he wanted four or five touches before they really kind of got into their action. And it was a ball screen on one side, flip it to the other side to a DHO or elbow, you know, it was templated stuff. But he has at times kind of really lean into, we need to kind of get some touches here. But Bud was that way a little bit too when he was here in Atlanta. No surprise that Quinn worked with him for a year and here in Atlanta,
Right.
there in Atlanta and all that sort of stuff. So there that coaching mindset is present in the league. Coaches evolve and the league evolves and coaches evolve as the league evolves and they kind of, so I don't know where Quinn is on that today. I just know I can think back to a time, whatever number of years ago, 5 years ago, what six, whatever it was, where Utah was like at the top of the league in terms of getting touches before they kind of got into their primary stuff on offense.
Yeah.
Maybe when you have Rudy, like you're like, you have to be a little bit more intentional about that because he's never going to touch the ball if you're not intentional about getting his hands,
Right.
even if it's just a simple, toss into a DHO or something like that. So that'll be interesting to see which way that goes. So let's do the guard, talk to the guards first. Although I know like Bogey might play a lot of three and four, but I'm just Trey, DeJounte, Bogey, and AJ. Those are the guys that I have getting the bulk of the minutes. So I have Trey at 32, which will be
Okay.
low, which might be a little low for him.
Yeah.
DeJounte 31,
Oh,
Bogey
okay.
20,
20.
and AJ 17.
So when you say,
Feels low for Bogey, right? It feels low for Bogey, but yeah, at the same time, like he's missed some games, here in the last year. So I don't I definitely see games where Bogey's like pushing 32, 33 minutes where they need that shooting on the court, right? And so I this is hard, as I feel like AJ at 17 is that's not enough for AJ. But where how do you adjust that? They're gonna need more Bogey than that in a lot of games. So I'm not saying that every game Bogey's gonna be limited to 20. There's gonna be games where Bogey might play 14 because of a defensive challenge that he's not really a matchup for. There's gonna be other games where they need max shooting on the floor because the team is blitzing Trey, and Bay and Bogey are gonna get 34 minutes each, things like that. But just as kind of a directional kind of starting point, Trey 32, DeJounte 31, Bogey 20, AJ 17. So it feels like that's you have a different idea. So feedback.
I do. And there are other sort of subsets of questions that I want to ask you about, like, how is this going to work at center? Like, that's fascinating. I think that's one of the most interesting questions for the Hawks this season. And, where does the rotation cut? I mean, I sort of cut it at nine, which seems very short given the players they have on the roster, if everybody's fully healthy. But I just,
I have 9.5,
Yeah,
so
I mean it's probably going to end up being 9.5, and I just did it as sort of nine for the mental exercise because there are going to be injuries and there are going to be a couple, all these guys like Wes Matthews is if he's not in the rotation on day one, there's going to be times where he plays 3 weeks in a row because
absolutely,
somebody got hurt, he gets some feel, he becomes an important member, and that they want to roll with it. So, but as just sort of a day one, what happens? I went with nine. And yeah, I have all the guards playing more. Like, I just think Bogey's going to be too important as a shooter. I think he's a little bit of a hammerhead in terms of he wants the workload. Like I think he's a guy who feels like he should be a starter. Like, he can make a, obviously offensively, it's easy to make that case, but just even as a whole, like if you take offense and defense together, like he can make a case like, hey, I should be an NBA starter, but he's adapted to that role, but part of that is I think he wants a lot of minutes in it, and there's no reason not to play him other than health, and he's getting a fully healthy offseason for the first time
So
in
what
a
do you
while.
have for do you have a number for AJ then that reflects
So
Bogey
yeah,
and
here are my
Trey?
numbers. I put 34 for each of the both of the starters,
Okay.
and I did Bogey 26 and AJ 22, just because
Okay.
I think they're going to need a, they're. I think there's a stagger coming, and AJ just needs reps, will probably merit some reps just based on how good he's been. And yeah, so
Okay.
I think I had no higher numbers for all of them. I think the
Okay.
more of the squeezes come in the front court on my end.
Okay. So that was the challenge for me is that I was pretty I doled out a lot of minutes for my forward. So I have Hunter at 30, Bay at 30. and Jalen at 24, and I chalked up Wes Matthews for 8. Just that's the 9.5 or 9.25,
Right.
kind of part there. That feels low for Jalen, to me, in terms of like what Jalen can bring to the team. But Bay's shooting is, we saw last year, absolutely critical. He juiced the offense single-handedly after he arrived, totally. And then Hunter, like, they need his defense. Like, even though I know Hawks fans are like, oh, Glenn has Hunter at 30 and Jalen at 24. No, flip that. And I can hear it like right now. And I can understand the sentiment kind of around that, for sure. But that so I had more, I had Hunter, DeAndre, Jalen, and Sadiq getting more minutes than both Bogey and AJ. And that might not be what happens. Like, they may need just like max shooting. There's a lot of games they need max shooting on the floor, where that's less Hunter, more Bogey, And so maybe that's where I will end up kind of being off. But I'm trying to think of the defensive kind of side of the ball too, where Hunter's really key. And I think Jalen hopefully will be a kind of a consistent impact player on defense too. So how did you swing the minutes differently than I did for that group?
I think I was on most of those shorter than you. So you said DeAndre at 30. I put it at 26.
Okay.
I think there's a little bit of clash in the kind of, we talked about, hey, are players connective? You said Scotty Barnes is connective. I said Veet's sort of connective. And I don't, if I think if there's a fair critique of DeAndre, like, I think he's a great defender and a great shooter and a pretty smart basketball player all around, but I don't think he's a great connective player. And I think that
On
dings him a
offense,
little
yeah.
bit on the minutes, even though, yeah, they need his defense. So I put him at 26 when you had him at 30. You said you had Bay at 30. Yeah, I had 28, but I kind of like your number now that I see it.
And what'd you have for Jalen?
I had 22. Like, I think he's
Do you feel
going to
like
get
that's
some of
not
the
enough?
defensive reps. Like, I think,
Yeah.
it there, you put shooters with Jalen, and you get Jalen as your defense and Jalen as a connective player, because I think that's certainly one of his strengths. You use his connectivity, and then the shooters like Bay and AJ and Bogey, and that sort of all works the way that Quinn would want. So I have a little bit more for Jalen. And who did I leave off? I didn't have
Did you have?
Wes at all.
Okay.
Who did I miss? I
Yeah.
left somebody out. No, maybe
Mamba
that's it.
Gay? Yeah, I don't have
I
Gay in the
guess that's it.
rotation. I don't have Lundy in the rotation. I don't have Gay in the rotation.
Yeah, I don't either. I just thought that there was a player you brought up, but no, I think we covered everybody.
Yeah, and I mean, we didn't. So it sounds like you have Kobe out of the rotation to start
I
the
have
season
Kobe
too,
out of
right?
the rotation.
Okay, same. Okay. Yeah, I
I
think
don't
Patty.
think he really gets any extended rotation time until,
Maybe in like January or so he's ramped up some,
yeah,
something like that.
right.
So
Maybe somebody gets him.
at center I was I took a short path, 24 and 24. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I did.
Do
So,
you think there is any consideration at any point this season about not starting Clint?
no, I don't think so. But I'm interested in who finishes. Like, who do
Yeah.
you think is the predominant finisher? And I've sort of suspected it might be Onyeka.
Yeah. So I think that'll be matchup dependent. I think
Oh, for
there
sure. But like
I
majority.
think when you have a lead, I think you want rebounding so you can finish defensive possessions. I think that's the when you have a lead, that's the number one priority is finishing defensive possessions. And I think those scenarios, those situations might swing more toward Clint. Now, Onyeka's been getting better every year as a rebounder. I don't want us to talk about him like he's the rebounder he was when he was a rookie, right?
Right.
He's better than that. Clint is one of the best two or three rebounders in the whole league. So it's comparing anyone to him is a tough, kind of evaluation there. But I think the ball, like if you're playing from behind, right, or you're wanting to play fast, Onyeka, like there's a lot of game situations where if Quinn wants to do A or B or C, like a lot of, and Yekka fits a lot more scenarios to me than Clint does, right? We want to play
Yes.
fast. We want to rim run. We want to move the ball. We want to swing the ball from strong side to weak side. We want someone who can, Onyeka is a growing ball handler for his position. He's a good passer. He's above average passer for his position. He's got good hands, makes good decisions. And so I think if you're trying to push the pace to come from behind or push the pace to attack a defense that doesn't switch into the floor, so well, I think what we're moving towards in this season is more fourth quarter scenarios where Onyeka is the solution as compared to Clay. And so I think that if we get to, say, mid-December and we look at this and it's turning out it's Onyeka 27 and Capella 21. It's the fourth quarter that to me is going to swing towards one guy or the other. And
Right.
like I said, I think Onyeka is increasingly becoming the fourth quarter solution to a greater number of scenarios that could manifest there. So it's going to be fascinating to watch that, for sure. So any other kind of analysis or kind of thinking you have around those two that I didn't lay out there?
I guess specifically, I would ask, what you said about Clint as a closer when you have a lead because you want the defensive rebounding. So if you're up by 6, 7, 8 points in the fourth quarter, that Clint might get his usual sort of fourth quarter closing stint. But what if it's, what if there are a few minutes left and it's a 2-point game, a 3-point game? Like who do you feel like is going to get the majority of those kind of stints? Is this the year that it sort of leans in Onyeka's favor for some of those situations?
I think so. But again, it will be a little matchup dependent. So if you're attacking, if the other team has a drop center and you want Clint to go to kind of operate middle pick and roll and kind of attack that drop center, help Trey attack that drop center, then I think Clint might be the solution there. But I mean, Onyeka's getting better as a screener too. So I don't want to assume that Onyeka is going to kind of enter this season still as far behind Clint as this ball screener, there. But if it's more you're attacking a defense that's trying to kind of load up and you want some short roll, you want some, kind of outlet opportunities to attack there, then that's. So I think if you, the more aggressive defenses, Onyeka is the solution I want there. If it's a 2 or 3 point game, getting back to your question. If it's a team that's playing kind of your traditional drop coverage with kind of the normal kind of help principles, I think Clint might be what you want to do there. So that's just kind of the way I'm thinking about it now. Does that make sense, or do you see something different there?
That seems fair. If is this the season? I mean, I guess I should backtrack for a long, at least for the last 2, 3 seasons, the Hawks have had the luxury of having a good defensive power, starting power forward, and a good defensive starting center in John Collins and Clint Capella. And so, if you're trying to close a game with a lead, they're good defenders, they're good rebounders. It was kind of automatic to go to them. We're expecting a lot out of Sadiq Bey this season. Defensively, his first season, was kind of hit or miss. There were certainly some very shaky moments for him defensively. Is there any scenario where it becomes semi-routine that if the Hawks have a 3, 4, 5 point lead in the final minute and they have enough timeouts to go offense defense, are there going to be situations where Okongwu and Capella are out there together defensively?
That's a fascinating question. I mean, is it fair to say? I don't know.
I have to
it
ask that
feels it feels unnatural. I mean, right
Yeah.
now the idea feels unnatural, but at the same time, it's like maybe I'm stuck in they believe in the old school way, and so maybe I'm not like advancing my thinking enough. To where this coaching staff is going to be. Quinn has his staff now. He had inherited staff last year, and so maybe I need to be more open-minded around what my expectations are there. I mean, if that's something they can kind of prepare to do, then that's I think that's great. I think Onyeka, like Clint, kind of organizing and anchoring, and Yucca, I think, could function as a weak side rim helper, sort of like Robert Williams and, in Boston, and that kind of that sort of kind of setup that they have up there. So it's a fascinating thing to think about. It feels
Right.
unnatural just because we've never basically never seen it.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe it's not something it, because of it, it seems a little bit unnatural. It's not something that maybe they plan for and as sort of a regular thing. I wonder if they could come across it just on a matchup situation. Like you're playing
Yeah.
Milwaukee and you've got to deal with Brook Lopez and Giannis, and you look down the bench and like who's going to guard Giannis? It's like, well, Onyeka should be guarding Giannis, and it's like, well, is there some sort of situation there where they feel like they need to play those two together? I don't know. It's interesting.
Or Clint's guarding Giannis, and then Yuka's comfortable at 28 feet attaching to Brook.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
So it'll be fascinating to see how Quinn deals with that. But because of their defensive status without JC, I think they're going to have to lean into some more kind of adaptive kind of techniques there. I think that's going to be one of the most fascinating things to see for sure.
All right. And anything you want to mention before we wrap up?
Nope, good to talk to you again. Appreciate it. And looking forward to Media Day and all that stuff.
Okay. Talk to you in December. Good night. Good night,
Yep.
Bob.
Good night, Bob.